So today I'll be talking to you about a system called Slicer that helps application writers write stateful sharded services. This is joint work with my colleagues at Google and Technion. So the underlying argument of Slicer is that server machines have a lot of memory, and data center applications should use them, say, for example, to cache data. This might sound very obvious to most of you, but the reality is that data center applications are actually not written that way, because that is quite complex. And Slicer's goal is to fix that and allow data center applications to cache data in their local memory. Here's the outline of my talk. First, I'll tell you why writing stateful services is difficult. Then I'll give you an idea of the Slicer model and architecture. And finally, I'll show you some numbers from our production deployment. So let's say you're building a DNS service. Google has such a service that serves DNS queries to both end-user devices and virtual machines running in the Google Cloud platform. So these, apologize, I don't know what's going on. Okay, so the DNS service serves requests from both those end-user devices and virtual machines, and since there are a lot of devices and a lot of VMs, it better be scalable. And since these VMs are running in the probably the same data center as the DNS service, and the service is on the critical path of those applications, it better be fast. So how do you go about doing this? So the easiest way is that you take the state, the DNS zone state, put it in the memory of the DNS servers, put them behind a front-end generic front-end layer, and when the request comes into the front-end, it can send it to any DNS server, because all of them can serve the request. So this architecture has some very nice properties. The servers are interchangeable, so adding servers, removing servers, server crashes, or there's a load skew, not a problem. The other nice property is that it's all being served from memory, so it's fast. However, this approach actually has two problems. The first is your state might become so big, it may not fit in the memory of a server, single server. And the second is, even though this is a read-only workload, typically you have mutations, in which case you want the writes to go to one server or one place rather than all the server's memory. So another alternative is to use the most popular paradigm in data center applications, which is the stateless architecture. Here the idea is you take all your state, you put it into a database like Bigtable, and put the DNS servers in front of it. So when the request comes in, the front end continues sending the request to the DNS servers, which send the request to the database, get the answer back, and reply to the end user client. They don't cache anything after the operation is done. This architecture has the similar advantages that we saw in the previous architecture, where all the servers are interchangeable. But it has some very severe problems, which is now you're sending a query, a DNS query, to the database. This is going to be very slow. You're also facing a network hop and facing marshalling costs as well. And the amount of work you wanted to do was probably very little, probably an order of magnitude less than the cost of the network hop. What you really want to do is take your state, shard it in memory across the various DNS servers, and just serve it. Turns out that this architecture is actually quite complex, and Slicer aims to fix that. Let's see why. So suppose you do decide to do this. You take your state, shard it in across the memory of these DNS servers, and you say, I'm going to do some simple form of static sharding. A request comes in, you hash it, mod the number of servers, 4 in this case, and it goes to the right server. That seems all fine. Now let's say one of the server crashes. A request comes in, that's black holed, right? It can't go anywhere. Another problem is that when you change the number of servers, it goes from 4 to 5. Now you can move a lot of keys because mod 5 and mod 4 changes a lot of keys. And you look at this and say, wait, I know how to solve this problem. I can use consistent hashing, because we know when you change the number of servers in consistent hashing, the number of keys you move is proportional to the number of servers you add. Okay, so that's a good idea. I can also make the front ends do heartbeats to these DNS servers, and that will solve the problem of dead or alive servers. So when a request now comes in for a zone and the server has died, it can be sent to another server. Okay, so that's all good. But there are two severe problems still. What if some zone is very hot and gets a lot of queries? It can actually become quite heated and crash, right? And you will be in a crash loop. A second problem is that these servers are independently making decisions. The nice thing is that they're making local decisions, but the bad part is that since they're making independent decisions, their views could be inconsistent. So a request for the blue zone could come to the front end on the left, and it might have a different view of the dead and alive servers, and it could send the request to another DNS servers, and now your affinity is lost. So you could step back and say, how could I solve this? One model is to have a centralized controller. This controller could watch over these application servers in terms of which servers are alive, load monitoring, and then generate some kind of a shard map and send it to the front ends. Now that all the front ends have the same shard map, when a query comes in, it would be directed to the right server, even if they come in the different front end, as was the case with these red queries that we saw. So you look at this and you say, well, I solved the problem, but now I'm running a service, I'm doing all this monitoring. What does this have to do with DNS serving? Nothing. This is just pure infrastructure. And furthermore, I'm also now doing fan-out of assignments to hundreds of thousands of clients and servers, because jobs can be pretty big in data centers. So this is a lot of work. Hasn't this been done before? So you step back and you actually see that this is actually the internals of a storage system. The controller is really the storage master, and the application servers are the tablet servers of a system like Bigtable. So why am I building all of this again? Why can't I just reuse it? And that's what takes people back to stateless servers, and that's the wrong answer. Because the right answer is that you should be able to take all this infrastructure, refactor it, and give it to application writers so that they can write stateful services. And that is precisely what Slicer is. We have achieved this by separating out the control plane that generates assignments from the data plane that sends the requests. And we've done this with a very small API in a scalable and fault-tolerant manner. We reshard in the presence of perturbations that I talked about earlier, and we've evaluated Slicer with a number of Google applications, and we've shown that it performs reasonably well. So there are actually many benefits of sharding or affinity. We saw one with DNS, but any kind of memory serving or caching would benefit from sharding. In fact, even stateless services would benefit, because in many cases, people tend to add some kind of an external cache like Memcache or Redis, and those are stateful services, so they would benefit as well. And finally, affinity can be helpful in other ways, for example, for batching. So we have a system called Thialfi that gets messages and batches them to write to storage. And by doing this batching, it's able to get a lot more efficiency out of the storage system. So let's look at the Slicer model. So here what I'm showing you are four application servers over which we are going to shard. These four servers we call as a job. The key to shard is specified by the application, and it can be a user ID, calendar ID, or whatever they want. Slicer takes these keys, hashes them into a 63-bit space. It then takes the space, chops it up into ranges that we call as slices. It then takes these slices and distributes them to various servers. Now, it's possible that some of these slices may get hot. For example, the yellow slice in the extreme right server. We have the ability to actually split, merge, and migrate these slices, and we might do that with the slice and send it some part of it to the third server. But the slice may be still hot. And if the application semantics allow us, we can actually make copies of the slice in the first and the second server. At this point, I should point out that when I say we make copies, we are actually doing key assignments here. We'll basically assign those keys in multiple servers. State is not sort of managed by us. We do have support for consistency in our system, and that's described in the paper. With respect to the architecture, we have two goals. We would like to have a centralized controller, like we saw before, so that we can collect all the load information or the presence information and generate good, consistent shard maps. But we liked one of the properties we saw with consistent hashing, where when a request came in, it was quickly able to make a localized decision and forward the request. So the low latency and its high availability are attractive as well. Can we combine them? And indeed we can. And we do this by having two different planes, the data plane and a control plane, where in the data plane, which I'm showing on the left, we provide two libraries. One is called the clerk that the clients link in. The second is called the slicelet that the servers link in. And for our control plane, we have a service called the slicer service that runs 24/7 and monitors the job for all kinds of signals. It generates shard maps and gives them to the clerks and the slicelets. So now when a request comes in, it can be looked up in the shard map by the front end and sent to the right server. Let's look a little bit deeper inside this service. So what I'm showing you now is the service, the slicer service, actually consists of three services. The first one is the assigner service that is responsible for generating the assignments. It collects various kinds of signals from existing Google infrastructure, like capacity information for the job, health, load, and if strong consistency is being used, leases as well. It gets this information, and then it decides whether a new assignment needs to be generated. And if it does, it goes and writes it into persistent storage. And after that, in order to distribute it, it uses another set of servers called the distributor service that is responsible for fanning it out in a scalable manner to all the clerks and slicelets. We also have a third service called the backup distributor service, which is completely different from the assigner and the distributor and is there for fault tolerance. And I'll talk about it in a couple of slides. With respect to fault tolerance, there are two kinds of failures we are worried about. One are what we call as localized failures, which is a machine fails or a data center goes offline. The second kind of failures we are worried about are ones that are correlated, where the whole service goes down, either the assigner service or the distributor service or both. And that can happen due to some kind of a bad configuration that we pushed, or this kind of a software bug we have in our service, or a software bug in one of the underlying services that we depend upon. So how do we handle that? So here what I'm showing you is the three services expanded out. They run in multiple data centers, and the backup distributor and the distributor have multiple servers running in a single data center. And the basic idea is that any assigner or any distributor can handle and serve any job. So now if a front end needs an assignment, it can connect to any distributor and get the assignment. If that distributor crashes, that's okay, another distributor can provide it. If the data center crashes, that's okay, because you can go to any other distributor in another data center. The story with the assigners is the same. Any assigner can provide the assignment to the distributor. If it vanishes, that's fine. We can serve it from another assigner, another data center. So that takes care of the localized failures, which is machine failures and data center failures. But what about the correlated ones? What happens if the whole service on the right goes away? So for that, we have two mechanisms. The first is we utilize the fact that the front ends and the application servers cache the assignments in memory. So now if a request comes in, it can still be sent to some application server. Of course, we cannot react to health or load queues, but RPCs can continue to flow, even though the assignment might be slightly degraded. But what happens if this cache goes away, like the front end crashes and comes back up, it doesn't have an assignment? And for that, we have these servers called the backup distributor servers that just read the assignment from storage and serve it to the front end. So you might be thinking, that's fine. Why does that help you solve the correlated failure problem? Well, if you actually look at this architecture, there are two parts to it, really. The right side is where we have the assigner and the distributor. Those are the services that have all the complexity and the functionality. Right? They have speed, they have scale, they do deltas, they do all kinds of things. Right? And that's what provides the whole feature set to our customers. But so that's good in the common case. But in the rare case, if something bad happens and they vanish, then the left side of the architecture helps out. The left side is our libraries. We try to keep them as small as we can. And the backup distributor servers are super simple because they have very little code. All they do is read state from a storage system and serve it. And they have very little dependencies as well. So what that means is that they're very unlikely to fail. So by combining these two sort of pieces of the architecture, we are able to provide full functionality and serve assignments even when the right side is down. So this gives a lot of confidence to our customers that even if the slicer service is down, they can trust us that their service will continue running. And that is very important for an infrastructure provider. We have quite a few features described in the paper. For example, our load balancing algorithm. We also describe how we provide strong consistency guarantees for assignments. We have a number of production measurements, including our comparison with a consistent hashing scheme that we had deployed for 1.5 years in production. We have some other experiments as well. But I don't have time right now, so I'm going to just briefly go through some production numbers. So here what I'm showing you is the usage of Slicer across a particular week that we took. So Slicer is used by a number of Google services, and as you can see, it balances a few million requests per second. And on the right graph, you can see that in this particular week, we had the median was about 2 million requests per second. A point to note is that out of these requests, 99.98% of them found an assignment, which means they could send it to some server. And of all the requests that were sent, only 0.01% of them were sent to the wrong server. And I want to point out that for most of our applications, sending to the wrong server just means either a retry or a forwarding. It results in increasing their tail latency. It typically doesn't result in some loss of functionality. So what we can see is that Slicer is able to provide pretty high available assignments and sending them to the right server. Let's see how good we are at load balancing. So what I'm showing you over here is a graph in which the x-axis are the services that are using Slicer. And on the y-axis, I'm showing you the maximum load of any server in a particular job divided by the mean load seen by any server in that job. So if your balancing is perfect, that number should be 1, right? And we can see, let's pick a particular job, in this case, Cloud DNS, since we've been following that, that Slicer, which is shown as a star, is pretty close to 1. So that means we are doing a pretty good job for Cloud DNS. If you look at static sharding, in which case there's no load being taken into account, as you can see, the number is around 12, which means if you're doing some kind of capacity planning, you have to really allocate a lot more resources to take these queues and these spikes into account. Whereas with Slicer, you can do tighter capacity planning and save a lot of resources. So to summarize, stateless services are very popular for data center applications because the infrastructure exists for them and supports it very well. Stateful services are not supported well, and Slicer is the system that addresses that problem and makes it practical for people to write such services. We provide functionality such as resharding in the presence of various kinds of perturbations, including server failures, load queues, and hotkeys. We do it in a scalable and fault-tolerant manner, and we do this by separating out the control plane that generates assignments from the data plane that sends requests. And we have built Slicer and evaluated in a production environment with several Google applications, and we've shown that its performance is actually quite good. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Nice talk. I'm Gerald from Facebook. Could you give more detail about the failure detection and network partition detection? How fast you can detect those problems, and what's the ratio of false positives?
So the question is, how fast can we detect the failure of a server?
And also network partition.
Okay. So we rely on detecting failures from an existing piece of Google infrastructure that watches over the job, and it does its own health sort of monitoring. And the typical number we have is around 8 to 10 seconds. But we also have a second mechanism where what happens is at Google, many of the servers actually fail because they get preempted by our cluster management system. And that cluster management system actually can tell you before the server fails that it's going to fail. So that actually helps us a lot, that we can actually do assignment changes about 1 minute to 2 minutes even before the crash happens.
Thank you.
So you showed a slide where you show that the distributors are more complex than the backup distributors.
Correct.
Why is that? It seems as though they're doing the same job.
Not really. So the distributors actually have a lot of code. For example, they maintain a stream with all the clients and the servers. They actually do deltas. They also have status pages that they show of who's connected to it. So they have a lot of functionality. And they connect to the assigner also. So they do a lot of work. Whereas the distributor, I don't know, a few hundred lines of code, all it does is just goes and reads it from Spanner and just gives out the assignment. And that's it.
I see. So the backup distributors are presumably much slower than the the real distributors?
The real distributors are very responsive, that's correct.
Okay.
Whereas the backup distributors, the clients poll them. They can get the first assignment very quickly, but the later ones, they poll every few minutes or something. So it's
great.
Very slow.
Thank you.
Marcos Aguilera, VMware Research. I was wondering if you can comment what happens when your service fails, the right-hand side fails, while you're changing the assignment, so that now at that point, some of the front ends may have the new assignment, some may have the old assignment, some
yes.
of the servers may have. So who has the ground truth at that point?
Right. The ground truth is always in storage, right? That's where the ground truth is. And it is entirely possible that while we are shipping an assignment, some of our servers fail, but quickly another one will take over. And
I mean, everything fails. Like, you wanted to handle the case where your entire service fails, like the entire right-hand side fails.
Oh, sure. So what you're talking about, we were shipping an assignment, half of it went out, and then everything failed for us, right? By the way, that's a very rare case. I should touch wood. It's never happened. The thing is, in that particular case, what will happen is that the polling period of the backup distributor will determine when they get all the assignments. Right? So if half of them got a new one, then everybody's polling the backup distributor at some rate, which is every few minutes, then it'll get fixed at that time. This is a very rare occurrence. So, good point.
Hi, Atul. Thanks for a nice talk. My question is about, so you went to great lengths to actually make sure that you have perfect or as close as perfect of availability you can by having these backup distributors. I was wondering whether you can comment on how generalizable this idea you think is for other for distributed systems other than Slicer.
It's hard for me to say. I haven't thought beyond Slicer yet. It's a good point. I think, in general, if you're building a low-level infrastructure service, there are a lot of critical applications depending on it. I think you have to think of backup paths. Is it a generalizable idea? I think the general idea is sort of that you should have backup ways of doing things so that you can run in a degraded manner. And I think, at least I've seen with load balancers at Google and other services, you have to provide that. But I think for doing it for something like storage seems very hard.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.